Welcome to the Everyday Discipleship Podcast. I'm your host, Maggie Narriday, here at the First United Methodist Church in Lakeland, Florida, off of beautiful Lake Morton. This podcast is all about a snapshot of a growing disciple. I'm really excited today to be with Mr. Ron Bell. He's like one of the coolest people ever. I believe that from afar. If you are have ever attended our church before, or maybe you're a member, you've probably seen Ron at the current service, which is our 11 o'clock contemporary worship service. Ron has a beautiful gift for painting and has done live paintings during our services before. But Ron has a really, really, really amazing story behind all those beautiful paintings, and I'm really excited for us to talk about that today. Ron is also the owner of Sacrament Tattoo Shop off of Creative Drive in South Lakeland.
Yep.
So if that's something that you're interested in, definitely check out that location. And yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Cool.
Ron.
I'm a little nervous, but we'll get over that.
Oh, no, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll be fine in a couple minutes.
We're just two friends chatting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah. So, Ron, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, basically, I'm a third generation Floridian. I'm from Tampa, Florida. I was born in 1971, so I'm 51 years old. I am a tattoo artist / artist, muralist, sign painter. I make many things out of many things, and I have a wife and three beautiful stepchildren, and I am a member of this church since I moved here to Lakeland to be with my wife in 2014. Actually, we joined the church about 2 or 3 years after that, but I've been coming here since. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Ron, you shared something on social media today. I think it was today, or maybe it was yesterday. I can't remember when I saw it exactly, but you said something like, from institutions to band dad, it's been amazing 8.5 years. Can you share with us a little bit about your journey?
Okay.
And kind of how you've come to the place that you are now?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I was raised by my mom. My mom was a single mother. It was me, and I was the youngest of three. I had two older sisters, and we went to church a little bit when I was young, but you know, she was busy, and like it kind of fell out of the what was important by the wayside. My oldest sister was kind of a miscreant, I guess you could say. She was a little bit tough to handle, so we just stopped going to church. And slowly through my younger life, like my late teen, early 20s, like that was like the furthest thing from my mind was church or anything like that. I started tattooing. I was a little skateboarder, punk rock kid. And a part of that was like a lot of partying and hanging out with people, and that involved alcohol. And now my oldest sister was actually addicted to a lot of things. She was 9 years older than me, so she grew up in the 70s and did a lot of hardcore stuff. And that scared the bejesus out of me, so I decided I wasn't going to go there. But the heavily prevalent, and that could be an entire 10 million other episodes, the heavily prevalent society in which alcohol is sold and distributed at a certain age, I was like, oh, that's okay. You know, alcohol's there, and that's fine. And, you know, of course, I drank underage a little bit here and there, but it really started getting bad extremely through the years, to the point where my life was, like, just a mess. Like, I was divorced from my first marriage. I was in an insane relationship that got me incarcerated for the first time when I was, like, 35 years old. I was accused of things that I did not do, but I still did commit, like, it was domestic things. And I was accused of things that weren't necessarily physical, but now in my recovery, I realize were still very emotionally abusive or verbally abusive or whatever it may have been. And so I've come to terms with that. But anyway, in 2014, my life kind of just came to a head. My mother was sick with cancer, and I was taking care of her. And she had a stroke on Easter, and we didn't think she was going to make it through the night. So my sister and I were estranged from each other. I asked her to come see my mom because it might be her last time ever. We tried to squash our problems with each other. And then after about a month's time of us, my mother made it through that incident, and we took her home for hospice. We tried to coexist. It didn't work. I was incarcerated one more time. I kissed my mother goodbye in handcuffs for the last time I ever saw her. And I sat in jail for 4 days during Mother's Day. And then it was like, this is just ridiculous. This has got to stop. This can't go on like this. I'm still drinking at that time. So the incident occurred, you know, while I was out, like, drinking and arguing and yelling and screaming back and forth with my sister. And so anyway, I got out, and I had to go and check in with my probation officer because I was in trouble. So I was on probation because my life was just insane. Burning bridges at shops all over the place. And anyway, but I got to the probation office, and she was like, well, what are you going to do? You're either going to be homeless, and that's okay, but you're going to come and check in with me every single day, or you're going to do something. And I was like, well, what about rehab? Just like laughingly, so, you know, but seriously, but like almost like just say it, but she'll never say no, so you won't have to really do it. Kind of thing. And she was like, I know a guy. And she called Edwin, who is my sponsor now today, but she called him because he was the intake coordinator at the Salvation Army Adult Rehab Center in Tampa. And I lived in a little motel for about 2 weeks till they got me in. My mother passed during that time when I was waiting to get in. So anyway, are we continuing this?
Yeah.
Okay. After keep up, it's a long story, but after that I was in there for a little bit. My oldest sister was still alive, and then my other sister that I was estranged from was living at my mother's house. And from what I had been told, we were going to get my mom's things organized, sell off what we could, split the profits. My sister was going to leave and I was going to take over the house. That turned out not to be so true. There were half-truths, some of which were told to me to protect me, some of which were just lies. And, like, my sister actually euthanized my two dogs I had when I was in rehab. But anyway, I don't like really trying to talk about that. But anyway, so I was in rehab. I was getting okay, and it was like, yeah, you know, whatever. I wasn't sure. Obviously, the Salvation Army is a Christian. It's a church. It's Salvationist. That's actually an offshoot of Methodism from back in the day. And so it was heavily religious. We went to church on Sunday. Celebrate Recovery, which is a faith-based 12-step program, was done every Wednesday night during graduation for the for us guys in rehab. Now there's females there too, which is a great thing. But because originally it was just a male facility, but now there's a whole big female facility to help women too. But anyway, so it was faith-based, and, you know, they would play. We had a rock band, kind of like The Current, that played contemporary Christian songs, and they kind of got to me. And, I mean, I was always a nice person. I didn't really, like, mean to do a lot of harm in my life. I stole a thing or two. I wasn't the greatest person, but I wasn't, like, murdering people. I know it's all bad, but, like, I had a good heart, and the songs would, like, get to me and, like, really touch my heart, and it was like, wow, what's going on? And I'd see all these guys, and they were so happy, and like they all loved the Lord. And it's like, what in the world? Like, and it's like, I finally came to peace in the warehouse working one day that, like, you're going to be okay. You're going to be fine. And during that time, I met Jeanette online. Actually, we met on a dating site, and we just took it super slow. We decided to be completely, utterly honest with each other. I told her within about 30 minutes of talking to her my entire life story. I said, I am a recovering alcoholic. I am in rehab right now. I've been to jail on numerous occasions. I'm a tattoo artist, and But God says I'm a new creation in Christ, and I will never let you down, and I will tell you anything about my past you want to know. And she said, okay, bet, you know, whatever. So ever since, it's been pretty good because we've never been dishonest with one another. And I eventually moved to Lakeland after coming here, and it's like, it was just like things, like little things, like we have three children. I was the youngest of three children. Mm-hmm. You know, there's fathers haven't been in their lives a whole lot. So it's like almost like I was making up for the wrongdoings of my own father with my children. And it's like just a lot of cool things. But I don't know what else to say. Mm-hmm. I did the steps and I got sober. And now I came here. And then I moved here in 2015, early 2015. And started coming to church, and we did. It was Ed was the pastor for 1120 when it was 1120 back in the day, and I had been inspired that now I was going to take up a new torch and I was going to start painting prophetic art or whatever. And I was like, this is really cool and this is neat. And so like, I talked to Ed and I was like, hey, I want to paint one time in church. And so he sent me what the sermon was, and I had a breakdown of what it was, and I was telling Jeanette what I was going to paint. Oh, I'm going to paint this. And then like a week later, I'm like, oh, I think I might paint this instead, and like trying to figure out. And then once the introduction started at church and the band started playing, I like completely was like, what am I going to paint? Like my mind went blank. I was like, I have no idea. I'm completely, utterly lost. I painted what I kind of thought at first, like, what? And it's like, when Ed started talking to the sermon, like, began the sermon, I was like, wow, I've got, like, 15 minutes to wrap this up, and it's nowhere near done. So I just kind of gave faith to God, and, like, he helped me create the first one. They had it out a couple weeks ago, and it's like, wow, that's the first one ever. And then, like, we've done it ever since, like, here and there, and we've gone bigger. They used to be little 16x20 canvases, and then it was, like, I did a conference one year with everybody. Mm-hmm. Bishop Carter spoke, and I was on stage with him. That was kind of scary. But I did four huge canvases in an hour and a half, and I was like, oh, wow. And so now it's always like, well, Ron, we want to do something for this sermon series at the end, or can you do that? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And sometimes I have a little bit of an idea and a little bit of a message, but I almost just throw it out there and be like, all right, God, we got this. Let's handle this, because I don't even know what's going on, mm-hmm. You know? So, but I'm just, I don't know. It's weird. I'm blessed in, like, so many amazing ways. Like, even the worst days today are, like, they do not match up with, like, the greatest days then. They crush them, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't have anything to be, like, I mean, I complain and I gripe or whatever, but, like, I don't really have anything to be upset about. And it's funny because it's almost to an apathetic cause sometimes. Like, I almost think that maybe Jeanette might get mad at me because I seem like I'm not worried about it. But it's because ever since I decided to give my life back to God and do the right thing and work hard towards my goals, as hard as I work to get that next drink, my life has fallen all into place and everything has been taken care of and things have been done. And, you know, Jeanette needed surgery a couple years ago. The whole church took care of, like, our kids that week because I stayed at the hospital with her. Mm-hmm. You know, they went, suckered you and Angie to take us out to dinner so they could drop off Christmas presents at our house. You know, like, stuff like that. It's like things I didn't think of when I was living a secular life and, like, making fun of God and making fun of Christian people. Like, ha-ha, goody-goody, weirdos, ha-ha, the silly invisible guy in the sky, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you just put your faith in something, it's, like, amazing. Like, it's weird. It's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm in this big... And this is going to sound funny because I'm in a recovered addict, but, like, I'm in this big, like, psychedelic trip sometimes. I'm just like, wow, I'm floating. Like, I'm so happy. Like, sometimes the band starts and it's like a song I love and, like, y'all get all hype and all into it. And I'm like, yes, Oceans. I love this song. You know, and it's like, who would have thought, if you would have told me 9 years ago, when I'm all tattooed up and drunk and like don't even know where I'm gonna live like next week, that I would be a well-approved member of church that would go around and get ties with Warren and paint at church and be as, you know, like allowed around children that aren't my own. You know, it's just funny to me. It's amazing and it's funny at the same time. It's just like, I don't know. I'm like severely blessed, and it's like it's so nice when I get when y'all ask me to say something and be a part of this stuff, because it's like it can really do wonders for people. Mm-hmm. Just having faith and believing in things. So, mm-hmm. All right, I'm done with that one.
Thank you so much for sharing all that. I know that's a lot,
right?
To talk about.
That was 20 minutes right there.
What would you say to someone who is at their own version of rock bottom, right? Because rock bottom looks differently for all of us.
Right.
But what would you say to someone who is at that point? Because our listeners, they might be there.
Right.
You know, we don't know what's going on in everybody's life.
The biggest thing that's always been like the hardest, like, and I didn't think about it back then because I was always drinking and I was like, oh, I don't care. But it's like asking for help. Even nowadays in my sobriety, I still find it hard to like ask people for help. You got to reach out and ask for help. People don't know. It's like I see on Facebook, you get some friends and they're like, nobody cares. Nobody cares. And it's like, we just all have our own lives too, you know? Like, it's not that we don't care. It's like, we might have missed your post. It's an algorithm and all this crazy stuff. It's not like we didn't care about you. But you just got to ask for help, and you have to want it bad enough. And, like, the 12-step programs that are out there between recovery for alcoholism or narcotics or Celebrate Recovery and all these other ones, those things work for anything. You can 12-step stop drinking coffee, you know? That's why Celebrate Recovery is hurts, hang-ups, and habits. So it's like if you go off the grid when you're, like, driving to work, yelling and screaming like a maniac, and you need to stop, then you ask God for help with that. And that's all – every single thing in life is based upon that stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I would just say reach out for help. I mean, there's obviously people want to help. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a lot of people, just one more little thing. A lot of people I know that are very secular will condemn the church left and right and be like, oh, well, you know, it's just, I just take money. And it's like, you know, like the church doesn't like make any money off of anything except for like the little bit that they might get from the bookstore for other people, and like, but they like the church does a lot of good things for, you know, so tithes help the church stay alive, and it's like it's a community of people, and they just, I think someone has a bad experience when they're young and then they automatically think, you know, oh, church is horrible and people judge you all the time. And I still get people today, they're like, well, how do people treat you at church? I was like, oh, they treat me like normal, I guess. I don't know. They don't bother me. They don't, like, judge me. It's weird. It's like, everybody's got their whole body tattooed nowadays anyway, so. But it's like, I tell them, I'm like, most of them are extremely proud of me and talk to me, and, like, some of them come up to me and ask me about their kids who have addictions and problems, and, you know, it's like a normal thing. I don't go to church because I'm scared that I'm going to burn in hell. I go to church because I genuinely like the people here. And, like, we have a common desire to help one another, and I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I want to do good rather than do bad like I used to, you know, all the stupid time I wasted just being drunk out of my mind, like just sitting there like complaining and groveling in misery for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I see friends today that do it, and it's like, you know, in the recovery world, like guys go up and down and girls go up and down, and it's like you try to help one another, but you can't help them all. But, like, it's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, some people deal with it, and it's like everybody's problem, everybody's fault. But, like, when you do the steps, there's a step. There's step four for me was the biggest, because I had to realize that it was my problem. I put myself in those situations no matter what. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. That person might have done wrong to me, but if I would have been in the right mind without being inebriated, I wouldn't have put myself in situations with that person. I would have been known better to, you know.
How do you see God working in your life right now?
He just blesses me with, like, so much stuff. And it's like, if I'm faithful in the small, I don't ask for big things. I try not to ask for big things. Jeremy told me way back in the day when I wanted to be a giant, famous, prophetic painter. He's like, just focus locally on your audience here. Don't worry about being famous around the United States. Just focus in the area. So I did, and I do a lot of art venue things here and art shows here and little pop-up markets, and I've done First Friday and this and that, and I've done a couple charitable things. And just after, like, when COVID started, like, things started hitting, like, being very, I don't know, he, like, it was almost like God was like, the door's been open for a minute, Ron. Like, go for it. So, like, I was not working at the same shop I was at. COVID was preventing us from actually tattooing at the time. I was working hard on selling art to make a living. I told Jeanette that when tattooing is let to be done again, because it's, like, in the same venue, or it was in the same category as barbershops for some reason. It's like health department stuff. But they didn't want us spreading COVID with the close contact. And it was like, I can't not work for someone, because you have to legally work in a tattoo shop to be licensed, to be reputable. You don't have to, but no one's going to take you seriously. I'm like, I want to be serious, taken seriously, like I always have been. You know, I'm a pillar of society now. So I'm going to check out these little units. And they're like, they're creative. They're business suites in the front of a storage unit place. So they're inexpensive, like storage units, but they have paint. They're not like corrugated walls. They're like tile floors and stuff. So I got in there. Andy came by and actually said a blessing over it. Like, I asked him to come say a prayer in front of the place, like the priests do for Guinness Brewery and stuff, which is another beer thing, but anyway, I thought that was funny, because I was like, hey, Andy, would you come bless the shop? And I call it sacrament because not only the symbol for the shop is actually the AA symbol and the NA symbol combined. And the reason I call it sacrament is because sacrament is like an important and religious rite. Like, it's a rite of passage. So it's like tattooing is a very big, significant rite of passage in a lot of cultures, and even in America. You know, when you turn 18, we're going to take you and we're all going to get tattooed or whatever, at least in my world. I don't know. Like, some people may not be like, yeah, I'd never do that in my life. But that's always something I saw. So, but it also has my face, and the shop has a ton of, like, religious artifacts, because I like kitschy things too, so I like a lot of Catholic stuff. No problem with Catholics, but I have a bunch of nun statues and things like that, and Mary statues. Mary's cool. Mm-hmm. But what else? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what does everyday discipleship mean to you?
I think that it means to, and this is something big that I've talked with Warren before and Jeremy sometimes, and, like, I think it's taking the religion out of church and just taking the church back to the streets, kind of, and, like, really, like, helping people. If it's a guy who looks down on his luck at the 7-Eleven, be nice to him, help him, buy him something to eat, do something nice for someone, like, give him someone a hand up that day. You know, just live like Jesus did. And that's how I tell friends of mine, too, that don't really understand my faith or understand organized religion. It's like, I just try to live like Jesus did. I don't live like the Pope in a big gilded Vatican City wearing fancy jewelry and stuff. I just try to be good to my fellow man and woman and neighbor. And just, that's how I see it. I try to spread, like, I try to live an example that other people look at and go, wow, that guy has really got it together and is really, like, jovial and happy. What does he know that I don't know? And they'll want to ask me, that kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So one thing that really I knew about halfway through this journey so far that was amazing was a friend of mine who was a former Jehovah's Witness who was excommunicated from his church when he was young and doesn't go to church or anything like that. He asked me one day, because I worked with him, and he said, did you find religion before you got sober, or did you find sobriety? You know, which one did you find first? And I was like, honestly, bro, I found them at the same time. Because as I brought my journey back to my faith, I was getting sober at the same time. Jeanette came here with the boys and Abby, and I was at the Salvation Army learning more and more about my faith again. And I honestly, I even told them before when I saw them again, there's a band called Christafari, and it's a Christian reggae band. They're really, really good. They do like Oceans, all like reggae, calypso style. But they did a revival at the Salvation Army, and they have a like curtain call, like come up. And I went up there and gave my life back to Christ at a Christafari concert at the Salvation Army rehab. So, you know, Christian reggae, rehab, tattoos, I got it all going for me, so good to go.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed listening to your story, and thank you so much for your bravery and sharing your story.